Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for listening. Good show this week. We've got Brian Curtis from The Ringer. Brian, one of the best writers out there on sports media. And we get into several topics. NBA countdown, ESPN, what's next for them, why they haven't been able to get it right. Olympics ratings being down. People frustrated with NBC on why and how they show certain events. Monday Night Football, Peyton and Eli, and whether Adam Schefter's the right fit for that job, who would be the right fit for that job to host with Peyton and Eli, and a couple of other topics. Brian also has a good feature out about Dale Hansen, the longtime Dallas sportscaster who's retiring after 41 years, so we discuss that with him as well. So all of that with Brian Curtis of The Ringer, and then we get into Train of Thoughts, the weekly Train of Thoughts segment with Sal Licata. And we just basically talk about how there's nothing to talk about. So, and whether this is the worst time for the sports fan or whether it's in February, we get into that debate as well in the Train of Thought segment. If you missed any recent episodes, check them out in the archives. Lindsay Zarniak, who's doing some Olympic work for NBC, was on last week. Andrew Marchand 2 weeks ago on Sports Media News. Sean McDonough 3 weeks ago. Chris Long 4 weeks ago. All those in the archives. If you could subscribe and maybe even review the pod, it helps a lot. All right, let's get to this week's episode with Brian Curtis, and then we get into Train of Thoughts right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, SI Media Podcast regular, I think we could call him now, from The Ringer, one of the best writers out there, Brian Curtis. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be a regular. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
My pleasure. You always write some interesting things, and well, I shouldn't say interesting. I should say unique. Interesting is a boring word.
I'd take either one, honestly. Yeah. Readable would be my first goal in that department.
And you have a column about popular Dallas sportscaster Dale Hansen out on The Ringer. Dale was on this podcast a couple of years ago, and I think maybe it was an hour. And I think I spoke for about 5 minutes, which is 4 minutes longer than I spoke when Bill Walton was on this podcast. But, you know, that's how it goes. But the story you did about Dale Hansen is really about the death of the local sportscaster, which I have to say I appreciated the column because growing up here in New York, where did you grow up?
Dallas, in the shadow of Dale.
Okay, so.
Fort Worth, I should say, but yes.
Here in New York, we had a bunch of really good local sportscasters, and of course, my favorite was Warner Wolf. And I remember being blown away as a kid because Warner Wolf on the 11 o'clock news would actually show WWF highlights, and it blew my mind. But what I found, so Dale Hansen, 41 years doing local Dallas news. So you watched him growing up, obviously.
Watched him growing up. He was the Champ Kind of Dallas. No offense to either Dale or Champ Kind in that statement. And like these guys that you watched, and I think Warner would definitely be in this category too, they were so 80s. They were so confident. You know, Dale has this line where he's like, I don't know what the word nervous means. They just seem to be absolutely at home on camera talking sports with you. And sort of using this affect that I don't think you would hear on like This American Life. I mean, there was no wall between sportscaster and you sitting in your living room. And he was fantastic. And there were a few guys, and I think Warner was probably a little more inclined toward comedy and Len Berman too. But there were a few guys who did this job who just lit up the teams they covered. You know, when the Cowboys were bad, you watch Dale Hansen on the 10 o'clock news. It was 10 o'clock in Central Time because Dale was going to get him. There's this famous interview, and you probably talked to him about with Barry Switzer, where he was, you know, he had reported about Barry Switzer's Dallas Cowboys coaching staff. Barry Switzer accused him of fake news and then just starts hitting Dale in the arm on camera. It's just this incredibly bonkers 5 minutes of television, but Dale was big. He was, you know, going to lay it out there, and Barry Switzer and everybody else knew that it would leave a dent.
Tell me about Dale's relationship with Jerry Jones over the years.
It went everywhere. He was the color commentator for the Dallas Cowboys radio broadcast. which a lot of these local sports guys did. I know Ted Leitner in San Diego did the Padres. So they would be criticizing the team on the nightly news, and then they would be working for the team calling the games at right. the same time. And Dale got so critical of the Cowboys, and Barry Switzer got so mad at Dale that Jerry Jones then fired him as the color commentator of the Cowboys. And yet Jerry Jones kept doing interviews on Channel 8 in Dallas. And there's this great story where Dale is at training camp and Jerry Jones and him were drinking buddies. They would constantly be going out during training camp to have a beer. Now, just this sounds like from a different time. This right. is actually like the 90s and 2000s. This is not that long ago.
Right.
And Dale said, hey, you know, I got to do my broadcast back to Dallas Fort Worth before we go have a drink. This is like, what, 8:30 in California. And so they're sitting there. Jerry is just at a camera range and Dale just lights up the Cowboys. I mean, just lights up the Cowboys. The management of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, either in name or by extension, with Jerry standing right there. And then the light on the camera goes off and Jerry says, you want to go get that beer now? Oh, this is That's incredible.
Amazing. Yeah, that is a different time for sure.
I mean,
that is amazing. And obviously, you know, people listening to this, probably they hear the name Dale Hanton. If you're on Twitter, on the blogs, he's gone viral several times over the last few years for some really passionate monologues. And then, you know, you've got the, you know, you don't want to just stereotype everyone, but the fact that, you know, he's a super liberal guy in Dallas, Texas, adds yeah. another layer to all of this. And I think when he came on with me, you know, he talked about some of the hate he would get for those monologues. But it's pretty amazing that a guy, you know, that far along in his career, that stage of his career, that age, made that transition where, you know, you no longer need local news for highlights. I mean, there's plenty of stations, I think, if I'm not mistaken, around the country that local news stations, they don't do sports anymore.
No,
but that's right. He was able to sort of reinvent himself, which I give anyone credit who can do that.
Yeah. And if you've seen those commentaries, and I know you have, and I assume other people have on YouTube or on Twitter, they're not like, hey, those clowns in Congress, they really need to get their act together. They're really pointed and really ideological. And he's doing it on local news. Like the local news you and I grew up with did not have somebody looking into a camera and denouncing the January 6th Capitol rioters. Like that was not part of the program. It was, here's a cute elephant that was born at the Fort Worth Zoo kind of stuff, you know, or here's a murder. It just didn't include that element at all. And yeah, he started doing it. He got booked on Ellen. He met yeah. Barack Obama. Yeah. And as I said in the story, he became sort of America's local sportscaster in this very, so he's very much that guy from, you know, who came of age in the 80s, but now he was this giant national star. It's really funny.
And came on the SI Media podcast.
Yeah, there. Truly the moment Dale had made it.
Forget Barack Obama. I want to transition. That article's on The Ringer, Dale Hanton from Brian Curtis, so check that out if you're listening. I want to transition to some sports media things. Let me start with this. We'll get into NBA countdown after this. I'm not an Olympic watcher, but if I'm on Twitter, obviously I'm following some things, and I feel like the only things I've seen on Twitter are about what happened with Simone Biles, and then people can't find what they want to watch. The ratings are terrible and Peacock is a disaster. Mm-hmm. Do I have that latter part correct? I mean, here's the thing. I guess let me ask it this way. The ratings for anything are going to be down right now because, one, we're coming out of a pandemic, and two, streaming and cord cutting has completely wreaked havoc on everything except for probably the NFL, which, you know, rules the country. So as a non-Olympic viewer, I would just assume, as someone who follows media, ratings will automatically be down because ratings are down for anything. But I'm hearing from people who I trust and respect that they're down and it's pretty bad. What is the case?
I don't have a definitive ratings judgment for you, but I will say that is absolutely what everybody is talking about, that they're mad at NBC.
Right.
I'd also say that's kind of an every 4 years tradition of the Olympics. Because everybody's watching, well, I guess less everybody now, but still everybody in our world is at least tuning in for something, right? If it's basketball or whatever it is. and it's not what they want it to be. And guess what? They're covering like 30 sports at one time. So, you know, I don't know that they're too in the tank for the US, right? That's the other one. Or they didn't like how they handled a particular sport. I mean, I don't know that telecast has ever been especially loved by, you know, by Twitter or whatever was Twitter before Twitter. So I don't know. It's I don't find a whole lot surprising about that. I have kind of this year, because you can just kind of watch this all day if you let yourself. I've kind of loved sitting down with my kids who are pretty young and watching the actual primetime broadcast where it's all kind of condensed and trying not to look at the results during the day, because, you know, 4 hours is still a lot of Olympics. But if you fast forward a little bit, it's like, okay, this is nice. And, you know, I got it. I saw the big gymnastics and swimming moments I needed to see. That's about how I've consumed it.
My producer tells me I pronounced her last name wrong. It's Simone Biles. So I apologize if I said it differently. My bad. I said I don't follow the Olympics. I wasn't lying. I do find it interesting. So and from what I've heard, though, what you just said, you watch the primetime regular NBC. Largely. That's where the ratings have taken a big hit, mm-hmm. which, again, to me makes sense.
It's an old fashioned idea, right? That we're all going right. to sit down at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And watch a host take us through a day in the Olympics, including results that have already happened and that are accessible elsewhere. Yes.
Now, I will say one of the greatest things to happen because of all this, though, is did you see the tweet from Giannis yesterday?
I don't think I did.
Okay. So obviously Giannis is like the biggest superstar in the world right now. Just wins an NBA title, got his 50 piece at Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. goes on Twitter and asks what channel I assume the basketball game is on. So right off the bat, I love that. You know, you think Giannis would have someone in his camp who he could ask what channel it's on, maybe hit the guide button on the, okay. So someone then tells him it's on Peacock and he goes, well, I'm not paying for that. I mean, that's perfect. Giannis, I appreciate like Giannis standing his ground.
Yeah. The typical consumer. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's it was amazing. Incredible.
His first tweet sounded like the old Huffington Post clickbait thing of what time does the Super Bowl start?
Right. Yes, exactly. We make those posts for people like Giannis. Now, so do you think, listen, I know you have no way of judging. It's total opinion and speculation. But like, do you see Peacock getting like a huge bump in subscribers because of the Olympics? I would assume they would have to, no?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the question then is how many of those people stick around, right? And say, you know what? I can't live without Peacock. And I need this in my life. So I don't know, but that seems to be kind of everybody's. Does anybody know the answer to these questions? How many people are going to stick around on our streaming service and find it absolutely essential in their lives? That's kind of what we're feeling out now, right? As a society.
I do. Listen, I have a dog in this fight because I've ranted about this about 20 times on this podcast, but I do think there's going to be some sort of come to Jesus moment with sports fans where they're not going to pay for everything anymore. Like, you have to pay for every, and I always, people on Twitter then don't listen and don't grade. Again, what I am talking about specifically, if you are a fan of every sport, it's not if, like, I'm just an NFL fan and a college football fan, you'll survive with whatever streaming services you get, ESPN Plus or what have you. If you like every sport, you have to pay a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this Olympics is sort of I wonder if it's a little bit of the sports fan saying, okay, enough of this shit. We're not doing this with every single thing at all times. I don't know if that's what's going on here, but it feels like it's going to get to that at some point.
I understand the frustration when people say that, oh my gosh, I had to pay for this and now this and this, and I have 18 things. We always had to pay for television. Unless you were a three network and a PBS person. We've been paying for the cable bundle. Did we think the post cable bundle thing was going to be free? Was that the idea?
But now you're paying for cable and streaming.
Yeah.
Yes. True. We always paid for television. Now we're paying for television. And I mean, I know a lot of people out there.
We're also getting lots more sports. I mean, I don't want to defend
media
companies here. Right. But we're getting soccer matches we've never got before in the cable world.
Right.
And well, you don't have to pay. Right. I'm sort of mostly with you where I'm like, I need the NFL. I need college football. I need basketball, any baseball. You know, I mean, like I'm a pretty down the middle sports fan most of the time. If there's some, you know, cornhole on ESPN, maybe I'll watch that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't find those. I understand. I want people to find it. You know, people are now mad at the regional sports networks because they cut the cord and then they can't get it over the top. And again, that's annoying. But if you're a huge sports fan, maybe just keep the cable for now. And then if you really want to watch the games, or don't be mad. I don't, you again, just I share the frustration, but I there's a solution to this somewhere.
I feel like you understand the frustration, but you don't have much sympathy. That's the vibe I'm getting.
I have less sympathy than perhaps I should. I don't know.
Yeah. No, but you took the words right out of my mouth and I was about to bring this up and then you brought it up. Because I know people more. I know several people who have cut the cord, which is what a lot of people are doing. But then they'll call and text me and complain that they can't watch this, that, and the other thing. You know, and it's mostly the local stuff, like you said. I know either I don't know if it was YouTube TV or Hulu or maybe both. But like they used to carry the YES Network, which here in New York had the Yankee. Now they don't have that. Well, and I said to my friend, don't call me to complain if you cut cable. You should keep cable and, you know, be a little smarter about what you're paying for with streaming. But.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it sucks to pay that much for cable. It absolutely sucks. Right. It is not fun. But I don't know. But if I really want sports, and I am going to just, I guess, at this moment in history, go ahead and pay, and yeah, we'll see where we go.
My issue with cable is I wish they would sort of let you make your own package. Like I don't need 17,000 home shopping networks. Like take those away and knock my bill down by $5 a month. Uh-huh. You know, like work with me here.
I think the thing would be to find somebody who would defend the cable bundle. Like, no, I want to be paying for 17 home shopping networks in addition.
Well, I won't defend the cable bundle, but I defend cable from the standpoint of I still like to watch games on TV on a regular channel so I can flip away when there's commercials and breaks and all that stuff. So
it's nice. It has a certain, you know, again,
but it is amazing. But I feel like, I mean, like I said, as someone who's I'm not searching or looking for Olympic content, and all I see is people complaining about why aren't they showing this? Why this is going on now, but it's not on until later. Why are they showing? Why is it on Peacock? It's on Peacock. It's not on Peacock. So I don't know. If I was an Olympic viewer, I'd probably be going nuts right now.
Yeah. Well, trust me. This is the Olympic thing we do every 4 years. It's just, it has a streaming component now, but the complaining about what NBC is showing us rather than what we want to watch, that it happens all the time.
Okay, so that makes sense. So it's the same thing it's always been, but now you're adding in the streaming with the Peacock, and that's updated, adding to people's
updated for the 2021.
Uh-huh. I gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. I don't want to specifically get into Maria Taylor, Rachel Nichols, because I've done it a ton. I'm sure you know you have. There's not much left to say, but I do think you have been right on in what you've said about sort of the periphery of this situation. And not enough people talked about it. But one of the factors in this whole mess is that NBA Countdown has just always been a disaster for ESPN.
Yes.
And if that show was, you know, inside the NBA, she'd probably still be there. You know, I mean, that is a factor in all this, in that they've never, first of all, let's start with this. And it's my fault, and you know I take blame for not writing it. How did we not know at the time that when they blew up that cast, it was Beatle and it was that whole cast, and they said Maria Taylor and Rachel Nichols were both going to be hosts. Right off the bat, we should have known that's a problem.
Yeah, I know.
Because what major studio show has two hosts? I mean, it's just you don't do it. Mm-hmm.
And that never works in TV, where you say you get half of this and you get the other half. There's always going to be. Something is going to have to give at some point, sure.
Because then there is an NBA Finals, and you can't split it.
Mm-hmm.
So you give me what your take is on how NBA Countdown was, like how that played a role in all this. And
the structure of the show just broken, especially the halftime show. I mean, watching during the finals, I did this one thing where I got out the stopwatch, and the three people, Jay Williams, Jalen Rose, and Woj, we're talking for less than 10 seconds. And that was a whole thing. That was our whole spiel during halftime. It was like 9.8 seconds. And even if I'm not like the, you know, guy who's at the NFL combine with a watch, I think I was pretty close. And dude, 9 seconds. I've just talked for 9 seconds. That was their whole contribution to halftime. And you're just like, who would this work with? If Charles Barkley had 9 seconds, Charles Barkley would not be good.
So why do you think that is?
Carmelo Anthony or something, he's not going to be good at 9 seconds anyway.
So do you think that's just ESPN trying to make as much money as they can with commercials? Do you think that's like, why are they not speaking for more than 9 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, well, first of all, there's, if you're going to be that short, you can't have four people talking in that short a time. But the Turner experience is just so much better because they go to commercial and it, or excuse me, go to halftime. And it's like Charles Barkley has time to make a long point. And whatever you think about it, I guarantee it lands with you rather than being like, what did he just say? And then Kenny Smith, if Charles says something that's just not right, Kenny Smith has a chance to answer. Ernie has a chance to answer. Shaq has a chance to answer. And it sounds like a conversation rather than a canned soundbite that they've been, everybody's been preparing for, and nobody's actually talking to each other. It's just the structure of the show is just completely wrong. And it's not, here's the thing about it. Commercials, yes, they're trying to get in commercials. It's not for viewers. You cannot convince me that that halftime show is made for television viewers. It's made for advertisers. It may be made for producers because it's got all these clips going on and all this other stuff, and you're whirling around doing stuff. But it's not for people watching TV. So, I mean, that's
like you said too. If you're gonna do that, listen, you're ESPN. You've paid an astronomical amount for the NBA. You want to make your money back. You want to make halftime nothing but commercials. Okay, do what you want. You're ESPN. No one's gonna not watch the game. Why do you have four people on there?
Yeah, that's what I mean. So yeah, I mean, maybe it's, what if it were Maria and Jalen, and Jalen's just going to have one point, right? Leave us with one thing. Again, I'd rather him have more than, let's see, 30 seconds total, but just tell me, like, I remember when Charles Barkley with the Bucks, he had that one thing, remember, he's like, the Bucks are really dumb, but they're going to win the NBA title. He came back and had that point at halftime. I haven't forgotten that, right? I forgot everything that was on ESPN within 10 seconds after somebody said it.
Right. But even the post game where they do have time, nothing ever resonates. I mean, I feel like every time Charles and Kenny and Shaq are on after a game, there's something comes out of it. I mean, you'll have Charles after a game be like, I can't believe America sat through that game. It was terrible. Like, you know, ESPN would be like a code red if someone went on the air and said that on their air. I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, the NBA, that ESPN and TNT are both partners with the NBA, but Charles will say whatever he wants, whereas I guess ESPN, they don't ever want to say anything negative about the league, which doesn't help in terms of getting some.
No, not in the Charles way anyway, but that's right. You know? Yeah. And it's just, you can tell, I remember talking to the inside the NBA crew. They were in LA right when the whole Hong Kong China thing happened. And they just had this big discussion on the air and it wasn't scripted. They didn't even rehearse it. I mean, you talk about like the trickiest topic for somebody who has a rights relationship with the NBA to talk about it. And they just went out there and did it. And Ernie was like, no, we didn't even talk about what we were going to say.
That would never happen with ESPN.
No, but you can just, and of course you're not going to do that every night. You know, right. Something that heavy, but you can tell when it's rehearsed and canned, and you can tell when it's people talking to each other and having an actual conversation. And there's no viewer that likes the first thing better than the second thing.
It is amazing for all their success. I mean, they basically run every sport in America. Like, they have not been able to get one good NBA studio show going. I mean, from the days of, you know, Magic was there, and then it's pretty amazing they haven't been. And I wonder if it's a little unfair just from that. Like, no matter who they put on, they're always going to be compared to TNT, and it's always going to come up short. Well, I mean, there is nothing they can do that's going to be able to compete or compare with NBA inside the NBA.
And I think that's hard. There's only one Charles Barkley, right? So like, right. Even if you were trying to go clone him, you're trying to think, okay, what NBA player can we have come, you know, talk about current NBA players and the way he does? It'd be really hard. But, you know, ESPN does College Game Day, which really works, right? And
right.
The right people, yeah. Cast has changed. It still works, you know, and you're like, so they can obviously do,
right.
You know, studio programming.
That's what makes it more baffling. And that's why I also think the TNT thing is a factor. I don't know if they're in their head or what it is. But, you know, speaking of which, Charles said recently he's going to retire in 2 years when he turns 60. I don't believe that for a second.
No
do you?
Chance. No chance.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
I think he's one of the guys, when you have people who are as famous as him, and you and I know this from doing this for so long, but they usually don't want to. There's a thing where it's like, do I want to put in the work that it would take to be a studio commentator or a game analyst. With him, he just obviously loves the pulpit of Inside the NBA. I just think he would, because I just feel that he would be saying that stuff no matter what's happening. So why wouldn't I just, you know, say it on television when everybody's watching and have a huge audience?
He, I wrote about Charles today in my column because this is what I find fascinating about sports media. This is like a little bit of a tangent, but I don't know. So Charles did an interview with CNBC and said, the only people right now who are not vaccinated are assholes. And what I appreciate about that statement is like, there's maybe two or three other people in sports media that can say that without getting in any trouble. Maybe.
I'm trying to think of them right now. Who?
Stephen A could say it and not get in trouble. He might get like a suspension, but they're not going to like if you're like, you know, the third right, third, what's the word? Not third ranked, but like the third level sports center host, you're going to get fired if you say that publicly.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
I love that Charles,
anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you're, I don't know, Spiro Ditas, you'll probably get fired if you say that publicly. You know what I mean? But
I would not recommend Spiro Ditas.
Yeah. To be fair,
no offense to Spiro.
Who's like the Fox equivalent? Justin Kuchar, is that his name? Whatever. The point is, Charles can say whatever he wants without repercussions, and he's still going to get paid from a TV network. So I don't think he's going to walk away. But what I loved about this is after I then see the quote and I do what I have to do, I'm like, why is Charles Barkley doing an interview with CNBC? So then I try to like dig into that. And he's like, he was doing an interview to promote either Aleve or Motrin or Bayer, some aspirin or something. And I'm just like, if you're Charles Barkley, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this exactly? You have enough money. What are you doing?
And I also have a feeling if they just asked him to do the interview without Bayer, he probably would have said yes.
Charles, I don't know. He can't, Charles is the one sports media person I cannot get on this podcast.
Really?
He says no to me. I ask every month and every month he says no. But then he does
an
interview.
He's got a lot of requests, you know, but.
Yeah, I'm sure he does too. But to promote aspirin, he'll do an interview.
I don't know. That's fine.
Do you think there's any chance they'll give Rachel Nichols that job, or can they not give it to her now because of this controversy? Because you would think she would be the one who would get it now that Maria Taylor is gone.
I would guess not, but I don't know that for a fact.
Sucks for her. I mean, because she would sort of be in line to get it. But
yeah, I would have a hard time imagining.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. And then the Monday Night Football scenario now with the alternate broadcast with Peyton and Eli. Someone reported yesterday, I believe, or the day before, that Schefter is a possibility to be a host with those two.
Okay.
Wouldn't you want someone with a little more personality to be there with Peyton and Eli? Or
somebody who's more of a facilitator? Who's?
Well, I would think you'd want someone who could banter with them. Like, I'm thinking of, like, obviously he works for another network, so this couldn't happen. But like an Ian Eagle.
Yeah.
Who, you know, not someone who's just a dry reporter.
Somebody, I guess we have to kind of see what the show is. You know, do you want somebody who's kind of setting them up like, oh, hey, here's a big play. Let's watch this, you know, while we're talking to celebrities, right? In the part of this, right? That they're bringing on interviewees. Hey, wait, here's a big play. We need to say something about this. I guess I want to know what the show is.
Yeah. I just thought of the person who would be the perfect host for that show.
Okay.
Kenny Mayne.
Oh.
A little bit of a problem now.
Kenny, sorry about that whole thing.
Sorry about the 61% pay cut, but we're paying Eli and Peyton God knows how much.
He actually would be good at that.
Yeah. That would be a good spot for him.
I still find the whole thing very interesting because I was looking at Twitter after it happened and people said ESPN finally got their white whale, Peyton Manning. And I was they kind of did, but they didn't get him as an announcer who they're sending on the road 17 weeks a year and they're producing and stuff. They became the co-producer of Peyton Manning's show, which is a different thing. And it's probably closer to Peyton's places than it is like what, you know, Chris Collinsworth is doing on NBC.
And will only be airing 10 out of the 17 weeks.
Yeah. So it's like you got him in this way of, you know, in this very new way. Like, I just think there's this whole class of athletes now. And this is probably always the case, right? Because the super, superstars, other than Charles Barkley, did not always go to television after they retired, but there's this whole group of athletes that looks at ESPN as like, oh, that's a, I don't want to work for them necessarily, but that's a place where I could take the show that I come up with and they'll air it essentially or co-produce it with me.
Right.
And I'll kind of do whatever I want on their air. That's actually a very different thing than hiring somebody as an announcer.
Right.
It's interesting.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I was surprised more people saw that as, you know, ESPN lands Peyton Manning. Because again, it's 10 weeks. Like you said, it's Peyton's production company. And, you know, I think all that does is really set up the three guys who are there now, Levy, Greasy, and Riddick, for just even more criticism than they don't normally get. I do wonder, you know, because Marshan had reported that Amazon wanted Al Michaels and Peyton Manning for Thursday Night Football. Was this a way for ESPN to block Amazon? Maybe that's a factor. I don't, you know, who knows? But yeah, this is not ESPN gets Peyton Manning to call Monday Night Football.
No, it's different. It's just a different thing. And as a viewer, that's it's cool because you have more choices. Like for I would say more choice is generally good, right? Just like I'm, you know, for the mega cast and stuff like that. But it's just interesting. And it's a different relation. I mean, ESPN's done this with a lot of people, right? They did it with Kobe. You know, it's mostly been on ESPN Plus. They did it with Peyton. Every day I get a new press release saying we have a new kind of retired or semi-retired star who has a new show. And I don't know. It's a different time for sports TV.
Certainly. Yeah. Speaking of which, since I just mentioned Al, I'll wrap it up on this. At the end of the day, everything is about money. It's all about money, money, money. But if you're Al Michaels, would you really want to end your illustrious career on Amazon?
I don't know. I don't know how he thinks about that. I get, and this is just purely from watching him on television. This is not from him saying this to me at all. I get a sense that he wants that he has another act left in him.
And I totally agree.
And if it's going to be Thursday Night Football and it's a new broadcast and it's a pretty decent game of the week, you know, okay. You know, and it looks good and all that stuff. Yeah, I could totally see him doing that. What's the alternative? You know, I mean, I would think that he would be, and coming in as a huge name, the best, you know, that's ever done that job. Sure.
Well, what I don't understand and will never understand is, as good as Mike Tirico is, and he's great, I don't understand pushing out Al Michaels. Or even just, I mean, maybe it's not, you know, NBC will say, well, we're not pushing him out, his contract's up, and, you know, we have Mike wait. I don't understand that. If you have Al Michaels, you keep Al Michaels until he is no longer great at his job, but he still is. So I don't understand it on any level whatsoever.
I always get weirded out when succession plans seem to be happening just so that you can have a succession plan.
Right.
We sort of saw like various late night iterations of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't push out Johnny. We waited for Johnny to leave and then we, you know, get, then we replaced. Right. Like what column was it the other day? I said, well, NBC may be grooming Drew Brees to push out Chris Collins. Like, what did Chris Collinsworth do wrong?
Right.
He's awesome. Well,
Did we decide
we don't like him anymore?
That's what I don't understand. They have Al and Chris, and they want to make it Mike Tirico and Drew Brees. And I'm not saying they do that.
I'm saying I saw the column saying that there was a problem.
That theory's been out there since they hired Brees.
But I just think that would be crazy to me.
I agree. 100% agree. And
Chris Collinsworth is great. So why would you want to do that?
Well, here's my thinking on that. My thinking on that is I think that's a lot of these other networks, ESPN especially, NBC, are jealous, might not be a nice word to use. What's the word? Envious of what CBS got with Romo, where they took a player right from the field and put him in the booth on the number one team and struck gold, and the guy became the best announcer in all of sports. And I think other networks see that, and they're like, we want to do that too.
I would say a related point would be the whole CBS Romo thing to me was about the importance of having a number two guy so that your number one guy does not get into a negotiation where you have no alternative but to sign the number one guy at a huge giant.
Oh, you mean like when that. They gave Romo all this money last year?
And you can see that. I mean, you can see Fox is doing it. right this year, going a different direction with the second crew. Right, so it's been a 2-year plan, right? Waiting for Olsen to retire.
Greg Olsen.
Yeah, you have this now with NBC getting Breeze. Let's just say making Breeze a Notre Dame guy, right, and getting him ready. You want that number two guy. I think you want, forget the succession plan, you want a really good number two guy just in case, right? You know, if Troy Aikman decides to go off and be a GM, as he's, you know, hinted that he might want to do at some point, you want to have somebody ready to go so
right.
that you're not desperate and casting around and being like, what do we do now? So that to me should be the lesson here. Get them ready, but it doesn't mean you.
But that's also, in fairness, that's hard to do, because if you have a really good number two who can be another one, who can be a number one, another network's going to plunk them somewhere along the way. Well, you know, sure, it's hard to keep those.
But that's like a backup quarterback in football. That happens all the time in football, and then you go get another backup quarterback. You get somebody else ready.
Like, right? I wonder, since I mentioned him earlier, like, I wonder how long CBS can keep Ian Eagle in the fold, because Ian's a number one guy, but yeah. Jim Nance is always going to be at CBS.
But is he going to be number one in basketball? And so, you know, there you go.
Right. You don't know.
The other thing is there's not that many jobs, right?
Right. That's true.
We're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 with Amazon. There's 5 number one NFL jobs.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the Supreme Court. Like, you don't, they don't open up all that often.
And those guys
probably
don't leave.
Probably a bad analogy.
Those guys don't leave. That's for sure. Last thing here that has nothing to do with anything, but I had to ask you because there's a podcast that's out currently about Siskel and Ebert. And I think you had the hosts on your podcast.
Yeah, it's a Ringer podcast.
Okay, it's a Ringer. Okay, because here's what
Gene
happened.
Gene and Roger.
Tell me if you go through this, because maybe it's just me, because I'm not intelligent on any level whatsoever. I am on the internet, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, the phone, all day long because of my job. So I am bombarded every day with like, all of these things, this show is streaming and read this article and this is coming out and this, and someone calls you an asshole and I hate your collar and your brain is going in a million. And I remember weeks ago seeing that there was a podcast about Siskel and Ebert, and I meant to either write it down or put it in my notes, like make sure, and I forgot about it completely because, like I said, I'm not intelligent. And then in researching for this podcast, I saw it on your page on The Ringer, and now I have it written down and I will listen to it. And yeah. I am looking forward to it.
Were you a Siskel and Ebert guy? Because I was.
I was. That's why I was a big Siskel and Ebert guy. I loved the show. And they were phenomenal guests on the Howard Stern show over the year. They were regulars. They were on all the time.
Absolutely.
And it would be Siskel, you know, Gene making fun of Roger for being fat. Roger making fun of Gene for being ornery. They've had some legendary appearances on, you know, they tried to get Roger to go on the scale. I mean, they've had some great moments on the Howard Stern show. So I always loved them and I loved their show. So when I saw there was a podcast about them, I said, I got to make sure to listen to that. And then I completely forgot about it. So I thank you for reminding me about
Ryan
it.
Ryan Raftery, hosted for The Ringer. It is awesome. It is really cool.
Great. How many episodes?
How they came together. I think we're 3-4 in right now.
Okay,
but
great.
It's really good.
I recently posted, I don't know if I posted it in Train of Thoughts or on Twitter, but I was in a YouTube hole one day, and if you've never seen the Siskel and Ebert outtakes on YouTube, I cannot recommend them enough.
It really, really good.
I cannot recommend them enough. So
yes. They were just great. They were that's that era where you just had like talk shows were still a really big deal, you know, in a way they aren't now.
Yes,
you just needed,
yes.
You know, what was it, Letterman? It was Tony Randall. You know, yep. Everybody had like Terry Garr, right? It's that everybody had like 4 or 5 people that would just come on seemingly all the time. And Siskel and Ebert were basically everybody's Terry
Garr. I have like an odd, I love all that stuff. That's a regular YouTube for me, is to go watch some old talk show clips.
When people didn't have Twitter accounts, that like it was kind of a big deal when they were on television, because you're like, oh, look at these people talking. Now they just, everybody just talks now. So it's, you know, slightly less special perhaps, but.
And now, you know, when people go on talk shows, it's, you know, to promote a movie, and there's really not much of anything that comes out of it. Whereas back then, you know, you could have some, you know, Joaquin Phoenix on Letterman, for example, you know, it was, you know, one of those things where you just didn't know what the hell was going on. So it was,
now you play
fun.
A game with Jimmy Fallon. That's
right. Exactly. I rest my case. We'll end it on that. All right. Perfect. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
Be well. Okay, take care. All right, joining me now for our weekly Train of Thought segment, my buddy Sal Licata from SNY TV and WFAN Radio here in New York. Sal, how are you?
Good. I feel like this segment is catching on. The Twitter feedback, at least on my end. I know you're way more popular
than me. It caught on TikTok this week because I posted a little video clip of us discussing the worst songs of all time. And and somehow it got like 6,000 views on TikTok, which doesn't sound like a ton, but I only have like 200 followers on there. And people were nasty. I mean, there were a lot of people who was like, I agree. Well, here's the thing. So here's where TikTok is different than, you know, on Twitter, you follow someone, and on Instagram, you follow someone. So you know the person. People who, if I'm on Twitter, people know me. On TikTok, you just scroll and people you don't know are in your feed. So people don't know me, you, from a hole in the wall. So there was a lot of, like, with me, there was a lot of, like, you know, who's this dumb fat fuck talking about bad songs? When who's he? He's a loser. Who's this? You know, someone called me John Lovitz.
What? What did they say about me? Did they mention
But you have to understand,
bald?
Most people on there are, like, between the ages of 13 and 24.
So why are you
on
TikTok?
So the songs that we even mentioned, they don't even know. Because I have to know these things for this ridiculous business that we're in.
Okay, I mean, I guess.
I do like it. I will say this. I do like it. It's a lot of fun. And what happens with it is they track the videos you watch and the videos you like or the videos you may send to someone. So then what happens is they populate your feed with those kinds of videos. So right. If I log on to TikTok right now and I start scrolling, there's a lot of like 80s music videos, TV stuff, food, sports, because that's the stuff, you know. Whereas like when my nieces who are 16 and 11, like if you go through their feed, it's all, you know, stuff from iCarly and that stuff. So right. It caters to what you are once you...
Right, and my wife watches all these baby things on there. See, I don't know anything about TikTok, but when I'm watching games, she goes on the phone and checks out TikTok. That's what she does while the TV's occupied, and all these endless baby videos come up. And I'm like, how are you following people?
But see, you would like TikTok because you can go on there and scroll through all these videos and get a laugh and watch what you enjoy, and you don't have to post anything and you won't get any negative comments. See, I know you hate Twitter because people are nasty to you.
You just said people
Because I posted something. I'm saying you can use TikTok without it. I had it. I think I made a TikTok account when the pandemic started because we were trapped. But I don't think I posted my first video until like 2 months ago.
And you're telling me TikTok's nastier than Twitter?
Well, it's all people who are like 17, 18, 19. They let it fly on TikTok.
Wow. All right.
I mean, Twitter, it's a different kind of nasty. Like, I feel like Twitter is, they know who you are, so it's, there's a lot of like trolling. Like TikTok is more like, you know,
just random people bashing random people that they don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can I tell you something? You know what's crazy to me? Obviously you and I do this, and I'm assuming a lot of people listening are, you know, fans of the business and sports, so they follow Twitter. But do you realize how many people are not on Twitter?
The whole world is not on Twitter. Yeah,
basically my whole, anybody that I'm in contact with, friends, family, they have no idea.
But how many times have I told you whenever there's been some sort of Twitter, whatever with you, like just put the phone away and you don't have to deal, and it goes away.
Yeah, I
but
know. But
we don't stop.
For what we do, it's so important. It's relentless. You're on there promoting stuff or giving opinion. It's just mind-boggling how there's a whole world of people who don't know the first thing about Twitter.
It's not the whole world. It's the real world. The real world is not on Twitter.
Right. I know, and I'm envious.
I go to the beach and I'll sit there for like 4 hours. No one's checking Twitter. No one cares about what's going on Twitter. No one gives a shit about Twitter. Like, these are just normal people just sitting there. And like, that's what the world is. We're the nut jobs. Yeah, we're the dopes.
You're right, and it's sad. My wife, for example, has no idea who's Skip Bayless or Stephen A. Smith. Like, she's never heard of them. I could be like, I could show them, but she'd be like, who's that? I have no idea. I'm like, oh my God, I want to be you. Like, that is, it's so great. It's great. She's obviously not alone.
Right. Well, I hope she knows who you are. You're on TV.
Barely. You think she watches that? What, are you kidding me?
Right.
My mom's the only one of the family who watches that. And she's, you know, obviously there are issues with that too.
So I think the reason we're talking about TikTok and all this at the top is because I feel like, for me, this is like people are talking about February. This is the dead time in sports. You have baseball, which is fine. I'd be more, you know, into it if the Yankees were better. But right now you have baseball and nothing else. I don't watch the Olympics, so that's not part of my world. So you have baseball and nothing until football. Like for me, once August 1st comes, my entire life is about get to September 1st. Get the summer over, which sucks with the mosquitoes and the heat and the humidity and this and that. And then September 1st is the dawning of a new day when the two football, NFL, college football, are here to take you through the winter.
The fall by far is the best season. Just right. The anticipation of football, because you know that for the next 20 plus weeks, you are locked in every, you know, I can't do right. every Saturday and Sunday, but at least one or the other, some people both, which is just tremendous. I will say, and it's funny, I had a caller call the overnight show this morning and say basically what you're saying. This is the worst time in sports. And
worst.
Not really, because for me, locally in New York, you have the Mets and the Yankees. The worst time for me is when the Super Bowl ends to March Madness. What? There's nothing except regular season hockey and basketball. So this isn't great, but it's right before the start of the best season.
Right. You're a local radio host in New York, so you have the Mets and Yankees you can carry. For me, on a national basis, which is what SI is, I couldn't find one sports story to discuss. I mean, every sports story now seems like it's about COVID and the vaccinations, which I don't want to talk about. And
or the,
you know,
mental
Aaron Rodgers,
right? Mental health with Simone Biles.
Yeah, but I don't even know. Like, I have no idea. Like, what her thing? I don't know anything about her. I don't know anything about the. I don't know about the Olympics. I don't.
I
like to
watch
me.
The Olympics.
I don't need to even know. I don't need to know the details. If whoever it is, any individual in any line of work says they're not mentally there, like, I get that. So whatever. But I don't.
Agreed.
But the you know, once Aaron Rodgers showed up to camp, that killed like everything. I think there's just like, I'm like, I have nothing in any, like, what the NFL stories are all about, who's vaccinated. The NBA has the draft tomorrow night. Okay. But I have nothing to say.
You'll have
about
free
that.
Agency next week, I guess. Right. I don't know. I think August 2nd or 3rd, they could start talking, and then 6th, they could start. So that'd be a big deal next week.
Now I'll give you an event I used to get so pumped up for, but has become a huge dud. And it's Friday is the MLB trade deadline. I used to love that. But I feel like every year there's never any big trades.
Maybe. I forget off the top. Look, again, from local standpoint, I mean, it feels like the Mets have never made a move. I know Cespedes in 2015. Yankees, generally, it's minor moves because their team's so loaded. And you're right. Even just nationally, whatever moves are made, you know, maybe you see Max Scherzer get traded. That could be a big deal.
That would be big. Yeah.
Possibly trade Turner. The fact that the Nationals are about to blow things up, that might be big. But yeah, you're generally right. And even, you know, the Padres making all these big moves, trade up Adam Frazier, who's an all-star from the Pirates, to a team that's already loaded with the Padres, it just doesn't move the needle. So
You would know this better than me. What was the trade? I remember being in, I was probably in high school at the time. Was it Canseco for Juan Gonzalez? Didn't Canseco get traded for like a big name?
I don't think it was Gonzalez, but I could be wrong. So,
but it was a huge trade. I'm going to look it up. But like, I remember, like, you used to have big trades like that. Now I feel like you get a handful of minor trades and, you know.
I'm trying to think of the biggest trades. I mean, I remember Randy Johnson getting
traded. He was traded for Ruben Sierra.
Ah,
that's who it was.
Ah, there you go. Good call. That's a good one.
That's like a big, that was a huge trade back in 92.
Yeah, I remember, you know, McGuire going to St. Louis. There have been some big ones. Now, you know, again, it's not as big of an event as the NBA free agency period, or certainly the NFL free agency period. So, I, you know, whatever. But at least, you know, there is something going on. I just feel like don't you agree, though, the worst time is that once Super Bowl ends till March Madness, there is nothing. What are you talking about? Hockey?
I don't mind. I'll tell you what. I don't mind that. I think here's my reasoning. I don't mind that because I'm burnt out by the end of the football season. Watching and betting games all day on Saturdays and Sundays is exhausting. So I actually like that break. I don't need a break right now. We're in the middle of summer. Like, give me something to, you know.
It's so true.
You know, the problem for me is the Yankees are hard to watch. So, you know, I'm not in there night in, night out for nine innings like I normally would be.
So you don't have that.
That's the issue.
And think about that. Across the country, you know, half the cities that have Major League Baseball teams are basically out, right? That's how that you don't feel that normally as a Yankee fan. So for you, even a team that could get the second wild card, what are you going to, you want a team that could go win a championship, but that's why maybe baseball doesn't feel like it sticks as much because you have so many cities that are already out of it halfway into the season. So what are they supposed to do from now until football year? I get it. I mean, for me though, that once championship weekend ends, it's like, oh my goodness, we have one football game left, and then the cold weather in the East. There's just hockey and basketball. The Knicks have been irrelevant for 20 years, so there really hasn't even been basketball to look forward to, at least from New York's perspective. So that's just
see for me when those games end. My thought is, I get my life back now. And I'm being serious.
What? Yeah, I know. And my wife loves it. Believe me, if you ask my wife what her favorite time of year is, yeah, the day the Super Bowl ends, that's it. Weekends are back. But what do you do? What are you doing in your weekends that you miss so much?
Not being in front of the TV for 12 hours a day.
I know, but it's cold out. You say, what are you doing? What are you going, pumpkin picking or apple picking?
I try to get you to go to Maureen's kitchen.
We do that.
You pumpkin
do that
picking. I'd rather kill myself. Pumpkin picking. That's just horrible. Aaron Rodgers showing up to camp. I thought if he didn't show up, I thought that could have been a really great storyline / content thing for us, but it's over with. I will say, well, let me ask you this. What personally, like, I don't know if this is the reality, but the perception for me is he caved. What did you think when he showed up?
Interesting. I would probably agree with you. First of all, I tried to pay this story as little mind as possible. Just wake me up when a decision is made. I don't care about the Aaron Rodgers saga. And from my standpoint as an organization, if you lose or have to trade the best player, one of the best players in the sport, you are a failure. So the Packers had no choice but to do everything they could to bring him back. But the fact that he is coming back where it seemed likely he was going to refuse to play for them, I think that's a win for the organization. Now, Rodgers may be
happy absolutely with is.
The deal. Yeah, right. As long as he suits up for the Green Bay Packers, the Packers win.
And I think what he has done too is now he has set himself up for some problems because, you know, there was a threat he wouldn't be back. He comes back. And now, you know, he wants Randall Cobb back. So if the Packers do all, you know, the Packers redid his contract. Right. So if the Packers are going to give in to every single one of his demands and then he doesn't produce, he's going to face some backlash.
Yeah, look, he's facing backlash anyway. He rubs a lot of people the wrong way. He's got a unique personality, not afraid to speak his mind and whatever his unique thoughts are. And I'm sure people are disappointed the way that he's kind of held the Packers up here. But it sounds to me, and I don't know the specifics of the deal, it sounds to me by everything that the team agreed to and that him coming back now, that this will probably be his last year because he could then reassess along with the team and maybe they feel like it's a good transition to go to Jordan Love afterward and Rodgers could go play wherever he feels like he wants to play. But for the Packers, in my mind, that's a win. And if you're Aaron Rodgers, you have another shot at winning the Super Bowl, which for a quarterback of his caliber, just one is not enough, to be honest.
Well, and it's not going to happen if Tom Brady's breathing.
Oh, stop.
It's true.
Yeah, you know, they'll cut the Bucks again. I will tell you,
though, it's going to happen.
We touched on this. Did you see that tweet with Matt Damon saying he would root for Brady even if he played the Bucks against the Patriots in the Super Bowl? Damon said, it was great. And then Brady has that tweet with, how do you like them apples? I mean, dude, this guy's great. He's almost better on social media than he is as a quarterback.
Every day he's providing something for us. To me, I've always rooted for Tom Brady. Always. He's always been my favorite player in the league. But now I just want to see him keep going. Like now, I mean, the fact that he won last year, I thought the Chiefs would win. Once he won that last year, it's like, there's nothing left to say. It's unbelievable.
Right.
I do have one non-sports. Okay, here we go. As I'm reading, so Rodgers is speaking to the media as we're taping this, and he just said to reporters that retirement was, quote, definitely something I thought about.
Come on. Whatever. I mean, thought about it. So have I. I've thought about it too. I mean, it's just not realistic. Luck. He's going to retire and leave millions on the get out of here.
The only non-sports story, not the only, but the one I wanted to touch on, I can't get enough of J-Lo and Ben Affleck just prancing around all over the place. They're on boats. He's grabbing her ass. Yeah, they're kissing. They're on And you know A-Rod is scrolling through Twitter and Instagram and seeing some of this stuff.
Which brings you
and great I find joy. It delicious.
Yeah, it brings you great joy to know somewhere A-Rod is seething because no, J-Lo that's mean. Is out.
Well, no, but I will say this. I think A-Rod's actually a little bit of a sympathetic figure in this, only from the standpoint of she went back to Ben Affleck about 5 seconds after leaving A-Rod. Right. There was no grace period. So, you know.
By the way, it's a nice tie-in here with Brady and J-Lo. If there was ever two people that can defy father time and defeat
oh my
father
God.
Time.
Yeah,
I mean, how does J-Lo do it? She's in her 50s. Goodness gracious. I know.
Her and Tom Brady have destroyed father time in many ways, right. It seems like.
I got to get on that diet, the avocado ice cream or whatever J-Lo's eating.
Yeah, well, he's got the TB12. I'm sort of thinking his pliability thing makes sense. I'm not into the pajamas still, but the pliability, I think he's got something there. But listen, whatever he's doing is working. And yeah, she looks as good as ever. Go figure. All right. So that about covers it. Like I said, I don't know what to talk about in the sports world and even in the pop culture world. Did you watch the first Ted Lasso yet?
No, I haven't had a chance to.
Yeah, I'm going to save them all, I think, to binge.
Oh, right. You said they come out week by week.
Every Friday.
What is there, a couple episodes that have been out so far?
Probably one. The second one comes out Friday, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'll look. If I had time, I would watch it, but I just haven't had the time to do so yet. But when you need a pick me up, watch Ted Lasso, or even go back and watch the first series, the first season again, and then right into the next one.
Now, to answer your question from before, that's what I do when the football season is over. I go back and watch all the stuff that I didn't get a chance to watch during the football season.
Good point.
That's a lot of, there's a lot of binging. I do a lot of binging in, you know, February, March.
I know. You're right, yeah. Because in football season, there is just no time for that.
Right.
I try to make some time on Saturday, but I mean, single Sal, you kidding me? I'd be all day wall to wall betting the West Coast, betting from noon Saturday morning. I remember I used to call me and Eddie Erickson and Sid Rosenberg. We'd start call each other like 11 o'clock Saturday morning and look what we're doing to bet the slate. We'd be going to the Hawaii game or USC. You and I have discussed this too over the years. That's what makes Saturday so great. Sunday morning, you're exhausted. It's been a long day, but that's where you got to get it back on Sunday through the whole day. So
I'll end it on this note. We're taping this on Wednesday afternoon. So tomorrow, 6 weeks away from the first NFL game of the season.
Wow. What is the opener again? I forget.
Cowboys, Bucks.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So we'll see Brady win another one.
Can't wait.
All right. Thanks, Sal.
All right. We'll see you later.
Take it easy. All right. All right. That wraps it up for this week's episode. My thanks to Brian Curtis of The Ringer, Sal Licata, WFAN, SNY, joining me as always every week for Train of Thoughts. And my thanks to you for listening. If you missed any recent episodes, go into the archives and check them out. Last week, we had Lindsay Zarniak, who's doing some Olympic work for NBC on the show. Andrew Marchand, New York Post sports media reporter 2 weeks ago. Sean McDonough 3 weeks ago. Chris Long 4 weeks ago. If you missed any of those, check them out. Give them a listen, download, subscribe, rate, and review. All right, we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.